Hi everyone, we just want to welcome you to the 23rd day of January and our history article on Chinese railroad workers and their legacy. And this is our second day of discussing this topic, which has become very interesting. We're talking about the history and about what actually happened during this time and about Chinese immigrants, mm-hmm. our migrants to the United States. And I have two overseas Chinese people with me in the studio today. Very aptly placed in the program.
Hi, I'm Linda, the other Linda.
Hi, I'm Campbell, the one and only Campbell.
And I'm the other Linda. And we're so glad you could join us today as we are talking about the legacy of the Chinese railroad workers. Mm-hmm. And let's start out by reviewing what we talked about yesterday. What is something that stood out to you, Campbell?
Well, actually, you know, this article is really interesting. In your intro to the lesson or to our radio program, you talked about who's been working on the railroad. And it kind of reminded me of when we were kids, you know, growing up in the States, we were taught a song. It's like, I've been working on the railroad all the live long day. You know, and when I was a kid learning that song, I didn't really have a connection to it. But as we're going through this article, I'm like, hey, this is very much connected to me and my own history, you know, and the history of my people. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, how about you, Linda?
Yeah, and I found it interesting that the people who came to work on the railroad were from all different walks of life. We heard that they had different professions, they came from different classes in society, but they had one thing in common. They wanted to make a new life for themselves. They came to America for new opportunity.
Hmm. And actually, that's kind of true of all immigrants to the United States, right? And the United States was known as the land of opportunity. It's the land where you can make anything happen, you know, and you can create a new life for yourself and your family. And that's where a lot of people, you know, they braved a lot of dangerous weather and storms and different things to get to the United States in order to have this new life.
And we're not talking about just one or two immigrants at that time. It was 12,000 immigrants from right. Guangdong that went there. Mm-hmm. The thing that stood out to me, and it shows how the world is connected, is that a lot of people left Guangdong during this time, and they were looking for opportunity in the United States because of the Opium Wars, the Taiping Rebellion, and there are other natural disasters and famine occurring at this time mm-hmm. in China. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these kind of happenings bring us together as people around the world. And if we look back just, you know, even now and within the last few months of the immigration that's going on from the Middle East uh-huh. into Europe, and I think some is going to be happening in the United States, uh-huh. you know, it's war again.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of, we are interconnected people.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
we're not just standing alone.
That's very true. You know, what happens in one part of the world affects everyone, you know, and a lot of times, you know, we can be very disconnected and we just feel like, oh, that's that part of the world. But we have to realize that whatever's happening in various countries does have an impact on ourselves. So it's good to be aware of what's going around in the world.
And just to remind everybody, what we're talking about, the Transcontinental Railroad being built across the United States it started in 1863. It started being built then and it was finished in 1869. And so you can just put that in your mind about this time period that the immigrants came for this. And now we're trying to find out who they were. Mm-hmm. And with a lot of help from Stanford University, they've gotten involved and very interested in this project since about 2012.
Right. So they're trying to flesh out, as we were talking about yesterday, flesh out stories of these long anonymous Chinese migrants. You know, in the past, it was just known that there were these 12,000 Chinese migrants. But now people are really putting in an effort to try to find out who these people were and what their stories were.
And we also saw that it was across a whole different, many different fields are involved here, like anthropology and architecture. And they want to develop a digital archive and have books and articles and all kinds of things about it to really promote this kind of history and have people find out what really happened. If you have your magazine, let's turn in it to page 35. And we're going to do three readings for today, and let's do our first reading in the left-hand column.
Identifying the workers. Last June, about 250 people came to the Stanford campus for a conference on topics such as railway labor strikes and archaeological findings that shed light on the daily routines of the workers. Descendants of about 50 railway workers came from as far away as Hawaii and shared oral histories, a key source of information for the project. San Francisco filmmaker Bar Fong has conducted video interviews with dozens of Chinese Americans, including prominent authors Maxine Hong Kingston and Lisa Si, about their railway worker ancestors. He is aiming to create an hour-long documentary on the subject in affiliation with the Stanford effort. Up to now, we kind of have this image of nameless, faceless men, said Fong, 48. We got some pretty interesting details about who they were, who they left behind, and why they left China, and the legacy they left behind in the United States.
So we're talking about June of 2015, about 250 people went to Stanford campus, and there was a conference on all of these kind of topics like railway labor strikes. And that actually did happen. There was a strike on the railroad, wasn't there?
That's right, because it sounds like a romanticized idea, traveling to a new country, working on the railroad, but it was hard for them. They endured some really hard winters and a hard situations, and they were not treated very well. And so at some point, the railroad workers kind of organized themselves into a strike. They wanted better conditions. They wanted better pay. Unfortunately, the owners of the railroad weren't having it, and they decided to starve them.
So that forced them to go back to work.
Right. And this labor strike is reflective of the dark side, what the railroad workers had to endure, and with immigrants in general to a new country. I mean, they had to put up with prejudice.
Lots of prejudice.
Yeah, we complain about maybe the prejudice that we feel today, but I'm sure it doesn't compare to what they had to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And also just being in a foreign country, I mean, they had to adjust to the food, right? They probably didn't like it very much, but I mean, they had to eat it to get strength.
And also remember, you know, studio classroom did not exist in the 1860s, you know, so they had a hard time. They probably didn't learn any English before they went over.
All right, so that would have been a major language barrier.
Yes.
Where was Doris when Yes, I think so. And also remember who they're working with. The other side of the laborers were the Irish,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're very famous for drinking, and this was no exception.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was pretty interesting. The Irish also slept outside in tents, and the Chinese workers were more sleeping inside the tunnels that they built. So a lot of rock slides occurred because they were working in the Sierra Nevada mountains, and they would fall and kill the people sleeping in the tents. But sometimes the tunnels would collapse, and also the Chinese workers would be killed in the tunnels while they were sleeping. So there were a lot of dangers.
Yeah,
yes.
That doesn't sound like a very good way to die.
No, lots of these kind of things happened. But I think it's interesting we see that we're going back and like 250 people came to talk on these kind of topics and also the archaeological findings. And these shed light on, this is a great phrase for everybody to remember. It's an idiom that means that gives you something, some light, so that you can explain something or find out something about it to make it easier to understand.
Right. Basically, you get more information and you're like, oh, I understand. And you kind of, again, the back to yesterday's idiom, fleshing out more of the story.
And they got a lot of stories from this. It says about 50 railway workers, their descendants came from as far away as Hawaii, and they got a lot of key information so that they can start building, this is very interesting to me, oral histories. Because, of course, nothing is written down about this.
Uh-huh.
So now, you know, this has been passed down from generation to generation.
Right, and oral histories are a great way to document history. They've used this with recording World War II veterans who have, you know, they've been passing away, to get their stories so that we wouldn't lose it. I mean, they didn't have to write anything down. They just had to record it. And also Holocaust survivors, mm-hmm. so that those stories are kept and they're documented.
So do you have oral histories in your family from your great-grandparents that immigrated?
My great-grandparents, who I didn't know, but my grandmother was the most direct connection to China. And unfortunately, she never talked about her life in China, which I find puzzling. But maybe it's similar to the immigrants we talk about in this article. But unfortunately, no, I didn't get any oral history.
No oral history? Okay. Well, we see now that we have all this information and we have oral histories. And so we have a San Francisco filmmaker who's interested.
That's right. The San Francisco filmmaker Bar Fong has conducted video interviews with dozens of Chinese Americans. So by his last name, we're able to deduct that he's also of Chinese American background. And he was able to interview several Chinese Americans, including prominent authors Maxine Hong Kingston and Lisa Si.
So, Linda, you've read some books by Lisa Si, right?
Yes, I have. And she writes novels, and they're set in a historical setting in China. It can be modern day or close to modern day, and she also sets them in ancient history or in a period in the past. And you can learn a lot about Chinese culture from her books. I recently read a book of hers that was placed in Hangzhou. And Hangzhou is known as one of the most beautiful cities in China. And the main character, she experiences a lot, but I'm probably giving away the story, but she dies at an early age. But you just learn a lot about the Chinese beliefs and Chinese culture and customs through her stories. And her background is interesting because if you see a picture of Lisa Si, she doesn't look Chinese at all. But she's probably more connected to her Chinese culture, Chinese background, than most Chinese Americans are.
Oh, maybe we'll have to keep our eyes open for books in the future. Because if this is a huge project and she's involved in it,
right.
then, you know, we might have some books coming from one of these ladies, which would be
Perhaps.
Pretty interesting.
Right. Mm. So the reason that Bar Fong was interviewing Maxine Hong Kingston and Lisa Si is because they are descendants of railway worker. So here we see the word ancestors, and again, this is connected with the word we learned yesterday, forefathers. So many of their forefathers were railway workers. That's a hard word to say, railway.
So their ancestors were the railway. Okay, Campbell's right. Railway.
Hard to say, right?
Workers. And they are the ancestors. No, they're the descendants.
They're the descendants. Their ancestors, their forefathers worked on the railway.
Or railroad, guys, just said railroad. Okay. So, Bar Fong wants to create an hour-long documentary, and it's affiliated with the Stanford effort, which we talked about yesterday, which is finding all of the background stories much as they can.
The Chinese Railroad Workers in North America Project.
Very well said.
Thank you.
Okay, so, it is true, you know, when we studied this, we didn't really study this at length in American history, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's this image of nameless, faceless men.
Yes.
And really, when you read about it, they're all grouped together as Chinese workers on the railroad, and that's what you think, a mass of Chinese people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people are people, and they have individual stories to tell.
Right.
So he says that they got a lot of interesting details about who they were, who they left behind, and why they left China, and then the legacy they left behind in the United States.
That is
fascinating.
So I think
it's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, these stories actually are very interesting. And there's been a push, like, not just about railway workers, but I can speak for Chinese Jamaicans, which is what I am, that we're more interested in finding more about our ancestors who first went to Jamaica. And so there have been, in recent years, also conferences on the Chinese who first came to Jamaica, And the last one was in 2012, which I had just missed when I went home. But in Toronto, there have been ones in New York and Miami. And so people have this interest in knowing more about their ancestry.
Mm-hmm. And also they're from, as you said before, from Jamaica in particular. They're from three places in Guangdong province.
Mm-hmm. Right. Actually from a particular province, three different towns. Yeah.
Within that province,
right.
Within Guangdong. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, let's go on and read the second column now. We're going to read this next little section called Learning Their Stories, and we're going to find out this very interesting little anecdote in this section right here.
Learning Their Stories. Xin Lin So, a fluent English speaker, went on to become a prominent Denver businessman. C's great-great-grandfather was hired to serve as an herbalist for the laborers. Another descendant, Sandy Lee, told researchers that her great-grandfather's work team was accosted by an Indian tribe and that the chief, who had recently lost his son, adopted the young Chinese man for 2 years. After he was freed, he went back to China, married, then joined his brother in Maryland and took up farming.
So we see three separate people here and three separate, very, very different stories. I thought that was so interesting. What about the first one?
Well, we learn about a man named Xin Lin So, and he was a fluent English speaker.
Without studio classroom?
I know, it's amazing. And so he went from being a railway worker, I want to practice that word, railway worker, and he went to become a prominent Denver businessman.
And this word prominent?
Prominent means a well-known or significant businessman.
Okay, so, and in Denver, that's in Colorado, which is like, you know, basically in the middle of the United States. So, very interesting. Usually when we think of Chinese immigrants, we are talking about the West Coast,
right,
or one of the coasts,
yes,
not the middle of America.
Mm-hmm.
True.
And then we see Lisa C's story here. Her
right.
great-great-grandfather was hired to serve as an herbalist for the laborers. I thought that was pretty interesting. I bet he has some interesting stories.
Right. Yeah, so it goes back again to the idea that there were people from various backgrounds who came to work on the railroad. So Lisa C's great-great-grandfather was hired to serve as an herbalist. So an herbalist is just someone who works with herbs, kind of like a pharmacist in a way.
Yeah, I think Chinese medicine.
I would say Chinese medicine.
Yeah. And what about the last descendant we look at here, Sandy Lee?
Right. She told the researchers that her great-grandfather, he was, I think this story is really interesting.
I know, it's so interesting.
He was accosted by an Indian tribe, which I think Native American, right,
mm-hmm.
if you want to be PC.
Mm-hmm.
Who, and the chief.
Which means politically correct, everyone.
Right, yes. And the chief of that tribe, adopted, and we see adopted in quotations, but he took him in as his son, or maybe, yeah, we can say that he took him in as his son.
Well, if you look at the verb here, accosted, I think that sheds
right.
a lot of light on how he took him in.
And accost means to approach someone in an aggressive manner. Here it's defined as stopping or speaking to someone in a threatening way.
Mm-hmm.
So being approached in this way, yeah, that would indicate maybe how he was adopted
right.
into
because then he
his
was
family.
Freed.
Right.
But we have to remember that American Indians were a big threat to workers on the railroad
mm-hmm.
because they're going right through their territory. I mean, they owned the United States. They lived all over the United States. So when people were building the railroad, no matter what country they are from, they are under threat
exactly.
all the time.
Exactly. And further on with his story, he actually went back to China and got
so
married.
Interesting.
And then he returned to the U.S. and took up farming in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Which is on the East Coast.
Right.
That is a long way from home.
Yeah. So it's really, really interesting. I think it's really great to be able to see that actually, you know, these early Chinese immigrants were a very big part of the fabric of America. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of times when you think about the history of America, you think of the European immigrants, the Caucasians that came, and then also the African American slaves, you know, but you don't often think about the Chinese workers. But you can see here that they were a very big part of the history and the fabric of America.
So I think that's an interesting phrase that you're using, Campbell, the fabric of America. When you think about why do you say it that way?
Well, the fabric of America, you know, is just like it's kind of this idea of a piece of cloth or a piece of like a blanket, you know, and the different things that weave together to create that piece of cloth.
So we're taking all of these people groups and we're weaving them together to make the country of America,
exactly.
Basically is what that means. So if you hear that used sometime, I'll go, oh, yeah, that's what that means. Then we are having a change of heart. And if you have a change of heart, what do you do, Linda?
Well, you just have a change in how you think or a change in your decision.
Well, let's read about this section. We have a section entitled Having a Change of Heart, and let's see what it has to say.
Having a Change of Heart. Many Chinese who built the railroads were not eager to recount their experiences. Filmmaker Fong himself had a great-grandparent who served as a cook on the railroad, but rarely discussed it. But in recent years, Chang said many Chinese Americans have come to regard this period with honor. These workers were the ancestors of many Chinese Americans today. Others see them as the forebears, even if they're not related to them, Chang said. There's romanticism and heroism around them now.
So we see that having a change of heart, as Linda said, is you change the way you think about something or change your opinion about something. We see here that the change of heart is that a lot of Chinese people who built and worked on the railroads did not want to recount their experiences. And recount just means to tell the story about it. And if you tell a story about something that happened, it means you have to start remembering it.
Right.
So they didn't want to go back there.
Yes.
But what happened?
Well, I mean, I think there must be many reasons for that, why they wouldn't want to recount their stories, whether it was because it was very painful or they felt it was shameful or they just were kind of embarrassed. I don't know. But eventually, they had a change of heart and they were able to get some people to share their stories. Filmmaker Fong himself had a great-grandparent who served as a cook on the railroad but rarely discussed it.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
And it could be because they're not proud of that experience. Maybe they feel shame over it. And going back to your question on if my grandmother left an oral history and she didn't, and I said she didn't really want to talk about her life before, and this could be the reason as well. Maybe she went through painful experiences and she didn't want to recount those experiences.
Right, because she's trying to forget it, usually. But it says that Zhang says that many Chinese Americans have come to regard this period with honor, which goes to support what you just said, Linda, that probably people weren't proud of this part of their history. But now they have come, they've changed, they've had this change of heart,
right.
And it's part of their history and they're thinking about it more with honor.
Yes. This Zhang is the Gordon Zhang we were talking about yesterday. Gordon Zhang is the director of Stanford's Center for East Asian Studies. And so he's saying that more and more people are becoming proud of this era in the United States and the fact that their ancestors were involved in it. And I know for myself, even though my ancestors weren't directly involved, reading this article and learning about this effort, I am feeling a sense of pride over the fact that these Chinese Americans worked so hard.
And non-Chinese Americans, is that right? Americans who are not Chinese should feel grateful because they still wouldn't be crossing the United States in 6 days if it weren't for the immigrants coming to build this railroad.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they are the ancestors of many Chinese Americans today.
Right. And, I mean, the descendants who are proud of this history. And I feel similar to how Campbell feels. And I mentioned earlier about getting in touch more with like the history of Chinese Jamaicans. And I just admire how those immigrants or those ancestors, yeah, they came to a foreign land. I mean, Jamaica, it's predominantly black of African descent. And there's just so much stuff that they had to deal with. Like, it's hard for us to imagine. But we do have this like romanticized idea, and we think of them in a heroic way. And maybe some of that is a little exaggerated, but there's a sense of pride there.
Well, I'd like to invite people to write into our Facebook page or to our letters account and tell us maybe some of your background history or from your forefathers about their stories. And but you need to make it a little brief, I think, in a paragraph or so, and we can see what we can post on our site about it. Because, you know, we all have legacies. And we all have histories behind us, and we have ancestors that have done different things. And it's good to find out and keep that alive, keep those stories alive. Well, we want to thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have found this as interesting as we have. And we invite you to join us again on Advanced Studio Classroom. Bye for now.
Take care.
Bye.